What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and we are about a week away from the start of the regular season. So what better time to compare my rankings with someone else? And I don't really know who to do. I was thinking about bringing on the Paul Spore, you know, because he's got great rankings. But, you know, fine, I have to settle with Eno Saris. Eno, good to see you.
He's settled. Thank you. What an introduction. It's great to be here.
So, I mean, this is the interesting time of the year. We've been talking so much about this for 6 months and gone through this opinion, gone through that, being swayed here, swayed that. We do have more data now, which really does affect things, I think, more so than ever, because we have StatCast in every single stadium finally. Oh my gosh, no more just like asking some random beat writer, did you see a radar gun on the scoreboard, please? Can you tell us something?
And that is huge. But also, like, you know, there's that tension where some people, you'll report something like this, and some people say, it's still spring, we don't care.
Yeah, right.
And there are plenty of reasons why, you know, like a stuff number or a velo could be off in spring and not be a big deal. Like, you know, the actual tech could be off. Yeah, because we're talking about like what, 12, 15 something odd stadiums that have tech in them for the first time. When we first got Pitch FX, there were some crazy readings. When we first got Hawkeye, Baltimore was all messed up. Yeah. So, like, you know, there could just be some stadiums where things are messed up. I keep seeing great stuff plus numbers for Marlins relievers. And it could be that they've changed things developmentally in terms of their process, you know, or it could be that the park is weird, you know. So, yeah, there's reasons to take it with a grain of salt. People ask me how much I have stuff, spring stuff plus in my ranking sheet, not on the, I chose to leave last year's stuff plus on the rankings.
Oh,
but if you follow into the Google Doc, you will see the spring stuff plus. And that's how I'm trying to take things. It's like, you know, this is the big number and this is the little number, and the little number matters, but maybe not as much as projections and the big numbers.
Right. So
that's how I'm trying really to walk difficult. A line there.
There's a lot of narrative chasing of understanding, okay, this guy's throwing slower, but maybe he's just ramping up. There's also actually, I think the biggest note I've seen on maybe the tech being wrong are dramatic dips in extension, where it's like 3 to 4, not, I don't want to say inches because it's out of 10 and not 12, but it's 3 to 4 ticks of extension. So like someone was at 7 feet, but now they're at like 6.5, and that doesn't feel right. Sometimes that is correct. Sometimes it's not. I remember seeing Chris Dale well over 7 feet on everything the first game. And then it was like 6.6, 6.7 extension after. I'm like, yeah, that's normal.
And the Braves in particular were getting a lot of unknowns coming through.
Yeah. Oh, Fuentes. We were trying to figure out like what his extension was for ages. Yeah.
Yeah. It was what are those unknown pitches? Do they get cleaned up, or I don't think they clean up spring data. I don't think they care enough to.
Sometimes do, sometimes don't. StatCast kind of does it. Like we pay for the license of StatCast, which means we have the live feed that we're allowed to use. And they clean it up like 30 minutes after the game. They do one pass, and then they do maybe sometimes another one the next day or the morning after, right? So it's been hard to navigate that. Of course, we have these pitch cards that are on Twitter now, and on Blue Sky at Pitcher List PLV. And sometimes we put out a card right away, and then we realize, oh no, there was something we need to fix with it. So our stuff number goes up or down 30 minutes later. So we're learning along with them. But we got to compare our rankings. And why I love comparing our rankings isn't because it's me battling Eno and like trying to pull him like tug of war to come over to my side. No, it's just highlight the different philosophies that we have and the different perspectives of it, of how this could be a different season for these guys. And guess what? I'm not going to touch anyone inside the top 20. I mean, maybe Eury Pérez and Framber Valdez are the only ones I think that jump into your top 20 that I don't have in the top 20. I understand why you're doing it, except for Framber, because Framber's so maddening with his curveball. Is he going to have his curveball or not? And it's too,
he's so solid. Binary. Like, that's the one thing that happens too early for me. People have been asking, you have Logan Gilbert 11, I have him at 8. Mm-hmm. It's not a huge difference, except the higher you up, the higher up you are in the rankings, the more something like that matters.
Sure.
And, you know, one thing that people ask me is like, what, how do you have Logan Gilbert that high? He had a forearm problem last year. And aren't you worried about innings? And I have Chris Sale at 10, you have him at 14, same deal there. And I'm like, well, because what happens is for me, there's a top seven where I feel good about their skills and their health. And then I have a choice to make. Do I feel good about the skills or do I feel good about the health? You know, I mean,
yeah.
I'm not, I don't think I'm going to put Freddy Peralta as my number eight pitcher just because I think his health is good, you know, and I don't want to put Logan Webb in my top 10 because his whips aren't that good, you know? So, you know, just because Logan Webb and Freddy Peralta, I think their health is better. I'm not necessarily going to put him ahead of Logan Gilbert because I think Logan Gilbert, if he's healthy, he's a better pitcher. So it already becomes health already becomes an issue, and it's going to become something that separates us because we're just going to have different opinions on their health outcomes. Probably.
Well, I mean, let's clarify something here. When you're making this, are you doing it as a best ball? Are you doing it as a 15 teamer? Are you doing it as a 12 teamer?
I do it mostly as a 15 teamer. Mm-hmm. But I have used, I am aware of where the 12 team breaks are. And one thing that I'll do is I'll use guys who are the highest injury risk or are currently injured and are coming back, like a Carlos Rodon or, you know, somebody who might just miss the first couple of weeks, like Shane Bieber. I'll use those little injury pockets as little tier markers, basically going into the season. I think I will do what you did is, you know, take them off the rankings once the season started. But I think to go into the season, you have to give people that have injury list spots the same rankings as people who don't.
Yeah.
And so the way that I've figured out to do that is basically, you know, Carlos Rodon's going to get a real big downturn in my rankings because he's going to miss the first month of the season probably, but he's still going to be there. And if you have injury list slots, I say in my preamble, hey, maybe you take Rodon earlier. I just did a draft where I took Hunter Green, Spencer Schwellenbach, and Joe Musgrove because I have five injury list slots and I'm just going to stick them on there. And then I get, and it's a 12 team league. I get to go shopping, you know, among a fine group of pitchers after I put those guys on my IL. So,
and that's, I couldn't agree more with that approach. A lot of my rankings actually is with that in mind where, for example, I mean, I actually
break out the tiers. So that helps.
Well, right. Fair enough. But like I do have like, this is the injury tier. And there's Bryce Miller, for example, and Jared Jones, who are two guys I just got at the end of my 12-teamer because I just saw the rest of the arms and I went, this is nothing that I feel is going to make a massive impact. So I'll get the future impact and then figure out off the waiver wire the first couple of weeks if I need to, which is, by the way, something that you should plan for in every 12-teamer, that you have to give yourself an opportunity to grab something that is interesting and new. It's just
because the first week is going to produce
Arizona.
Yeah.
If you don't get it in April, you're done. That's it. You got to figure it out in April. So you have to give yourself that opportunity. And also, as you go shallower, it means that the injured guys, or at least the ones who you expect to miss time at some point, but are healthy now, those should get rocketed up your ranks because the replacement value of them is higher. And so you're trying to consolidate roster spots of quality as much as you can. So when you have someone like Tyler Glasnow and Shohei Ohtani, I actually have Shohei Ohtani further up than you do because I see it as he's just going to have this 158 inning season. He pitched last year. I kind of forgot that he did as much as he did. And I think he's relatively good to go. While Glasnow I have at 17 because I trust my ability to replace his slot in season. And I would love to have that quality while I can. So, I mean, that's really the mentality of those. I don't think those are the most interesting things we can focus on because there are some key players that there's going to be some different sense of perception. So one I really want to highlight is Shota Imanaga. We have a 26 spot difference. You have him at 58. I am at 52. I'm just going to tell you right now why I'm at 32. He's up in velocity in the spring. That was the biggest concern that we had. I think last year was the fastball was worse. And I know we talked about Imanaga before We had another rankings debate about it. Minoc was something you split. You have a great stat. I'm going to let you say again about KMIS block rate. And I understand that. I'm curious more that if you are, it looks like you're not buying into the velocity jump, or you just put these rankings out before the velocity jump was showcased at least twice.
There's a little bit of, you know, what's this going to look like the further he stretches out? Is this a velocity bump because he's, you know, airing it out and showing everybody, no, my velo's back. You know, like I think where like the over under for me on his regular season velocity is not where it is now. It is maybe where it once was. So he was 91.9 in his rookie year. And then 90.8 last year. I think I would put the over under for his regular season velocity somewhere in between basically his average for his career, 91.4. That's where I think it would be.
Sure.
Like, where was it in his last start?
92.2 on Tuesday across 76 pitches.
That's a pretty good number. So maybe I'll be wrong, and maybe it'll be more like 91.9 in his first season. 91.9 in his first season produced a 2.91 ERA, but if you look at some of the expected numbers, you know, it did have, you know, he did have a home run problem even in 2024.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I don't usually lose FIP or XFIP that much, but like those numbers were more in the sort of mid to high threes. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he's given up a bunch of homers this spring too. And so in the end, I feel like it won't dramatically change who he is. Like, I think we've established who he is. I think I was wrong to think that he would be like in the 70s, you know, because I was worried that the second half last year, and if the velo goes down even more and he comes in and he's barely cracking 90s this spring, I wouldn't want him at all. So the way that I kind of meshed like the risk of that, and maybe he's moving up from a deeper place than you, right? So he's moving up for me, but maybe he should move up further. I still don't think he would move into the top 50 because that home run rate is a risk. It's just,
He
lives up in the zone, even at a 105 stuff plus, which includes, you know, fastballs that went faster than his last outing. I think he'll settle in at sort of a 99 stuff plus for the fastball with a high expected home run rate and a high expected whiff rate. So, and I know he has more than two pitches, but it's a surprisingly small arsenal. It reminds me a lot of Kevin Gausman, and it reminds me of Kevin Gausman three ticks slower, even with the new velo.
Sure.
So I think I'm just a little bit more pessimistic on him in general. Maybe 58 is a little bit low, but I don't think he gets into the top 50 for me.
Cool. I will mention that he's still going heavy on sweeper to lefties. So it's he didn't even throw a splitter to a lefty on Tuesday. I mean,
but is he like a two pitch guy against each side?
Yeah, two pitch against each, which is totally fair.
And I don't know how to represent that. Is that like a 2.5?
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm happy that we are at least talking about that more. I certainly was lazy in the past, or at least I didn't have a good resource to always get that in front of
me. Here's a guy we agree on, but I just want to throw out there in this context. Nolan McLean, watching the WBC, any more nervous about his approach against lefties?
Oh, man. I mean, okay. I don't like using the spin rate number ever. I feel like it's just silly, except it was like 3,200 RPM sweepers.
Yeah, but then he gave up homers to Willy Abreu both times. And,
well, okay, so the Willy Abreu one, I was watching this live, right? We have like a little mini meetup in Brooklyn, and they'll tell you, Willy Abreu hit a home run already in the World Baseball Classic. Okay, that home run up and in, like at the top of the zone, maybe even slightly higher, was that one home run. So first at bat, Willy Abreu to Nolan McLean. It gets to be two strikes, and I am saying, man, he could throw a high four-seamer, and he just threw this, I believe it was a changeup away. He's like, man, that really speaks to this. I wouldn't do that. I would do a backdoor sweeper because of Willy Abreu. So he's shown that he actually wants that, and he hunts it, and like he can hit it out. And McLean got it definitely up and out of the zone, and it struck at Willy Abreu. So what happens in the second at bat? Same scenario.
There I go.
And where does he go? It's not in like in a vacuum that looks like an incredible pitch because it's right at the top of the zone. But because it's not out of the zone, it's now more hittable for Willy Abreu when he hits another home run. And I'm just like, how am I getting this scouting report? Like, how is this? Like, oh man, it that destroyed me. The skill set, I think one of the biggest concerns we had about Nolan McLean was, hey, we didn't actually see swing strikes on the sweeper last year. We saw called strikes, but we didn't see swing strikes. And
well, I saw that he walked twice the lefties that he over the righties. So like,
yeah,
he was way more tentative against lefties.
Right. So at least at the very least against righties, hey, hopefully the strikeouts can be there on sweepers, which I think obviously can. And then against lefties, what I have seen are a new, it's a new cutter going inside with intent to lefties. Huge fan of that. You know me. So yeah. I found myself suddenly being sold, and I cannot believe I actually drafted him, you know.
All right.
He was the 30th starter off the board. And I was like, I can't believe this. All right, fine. I'll take Nolan McLean. Mm-hmm. It is interesting that we are, the whole progression. I'm just excited to watch him, you know. He still has elements of command and like pitchability that you know it's there, but it isn't executed or is just a little fringy on the edges. He's going to be really good. Someone you have right next to him, actually right ahead of him, that I originally did and I started to lower, but I kind of agree with you, but I kind of don't. It's Drew Rasmussen. You have him at 22. And you know the one question that everyone's going to give you. What is that question, you know, about Drew Rasmussen?
How deep is he going to go into games?
Oh, yes. What are the innings this year?
Yeah, what are the innings?
And I wouldn't actually even say that that's the massive concern I have with him. Because, like, yeah, guys, all right, he might be 150 again. Like, you don't think he's going to go 170, 180 after 150 last year, do you?
No, I think it'll be actually very similar to what he did last year. I do wonder if they'll maybe let him go deeper into games.
Yeah, I hope so. But at the same time, the Rays are like, well, that just worked.
You're right, exactly.
We didn't really expect that to totally work, and it did. So maybe we just do that. The real issue I see with Drew Rasmussen is that he did not have his breaking stuff working last year. And he went to cutter, four-seamer, sinker, just pretty much exclusively. Every so often would have this curveball and sweeper. And what I've seen in the spring is pretty much the same. And it just makes me a little concerned that he's going to be more understood and the book will be on him a little bit more as we start seeing more of these cutters and sinkers and fastballs across the league as well. It just makes it a little less tempting. And I look at last year and I see the peak. Like we can't get better from last year, I don't think, with Drew Rasmussen at this point. And when it's capped at that 150 as well, I just found myself not quite wanting to go after him as opposed to, I don't know, his teammate Pepio or Nick Pivetta, who is fortunately past the arm fatigue. That's where my mind was. I'm sure you had more, you know, just sell me on Drew Rasmussen. I want to be resold again.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and it is a little concerning to me that the stuff on his curveball is gone this spring and again, and he's not throwing it. He's only thrown four curveballs all spring. And so he has been cutter, four-seam, sinker, changeup with a real emphasis on the cutter, four-seam, sinker. But we've seen a lot of success from somebody like Chad Patrick, and if he's just like Chad Patrick with more velo, you know, we were pretty excited about how Chad Patrick looked at the end of the season with more velo. Now, would we put him in the top 25? That is a good question. And the strikeout rate for Rasmussen fell post-surgery. The stuff on his breaking balls fell. It is weird because I have Rasmussen that high, but I have maybe zero shares.
Oh, wow. So, really?
Yeah.
How does that?
No. I have a couple shares in keeper leagues where it's sort of leftover shares.
Gotcha.
But in new leagues, I have not really drafted him much. So that might be one. Also, it is interesting that Rasmussen goes right before the hype group for me. Mizorowski, Burns, Savage, all them. And you know, I think when faced with equal amounts of risk between Drew Rasmussen and say an Emmett Sheehan, I've gone with the younger player because I do think Rasmussen is risky and he's in a risky tier for me. Mm-hmm. And so there's just been other guys who have been like, oh, if I'm going to accept skills risk and health risk, then I'd rather do it with, say, a Mizorowski, who I have a couple shares of, Sheehan, I have a couple shares of. Now, the Sheehan thing
hit
a roadblock this week, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I posted an image that was Emmett Sheehan at 93.7 after averaging 95 and 96 last year. His penultimate at bat, I want to say, was a 92.5 mph fastball, and a 91.8 was in there. Something just, what is this? Yeah, that's really scary. The Dodgers did just put River Ryan into the minors, though. So
his role seems safe.
Yeah. I mean, there's been nothing about it, but it's one of those things that, like, you just don't want any dings at this point, you know? Like, if you can just avoid anything, you just will give yourself an excuse not to do it, right? It's kind of why I understand why people are moving away from Chase Burns a little bit more right now, because of the whole two-inning thing. He's fine. He's in the rotation, but six-man now, like, are they going to manage his innings early, piggyback this? It's so strange. And yet, I mean, I understand. You have Chase Burns at, let's see here, 26. I have him at 40. I initially had him around you. I got scared off by the flexor injury that he had last year. And then the news of the two innings, everything like that, I just didn't change it. But the stuff is so good, you know. I mean, he's such a good pitcher.
Yeah, with Burns, I think that's why maybe Rasmussen needs to drop in my rankings the next update, just because if Burns, I think between Burns and Rasmussen, who's more likely to put up 150 innings with like a 2.7 ERA this year? Seems like Burns.
Mm.
You know, even or it's 140 innings or whatever. But if it's a slightly short number of innings, but a great numbers, I think it's Burns. And you know, I have Mizorowski ahead of Burns just because I think he's ahead innings wise. I think Mizorowski's ahead, you know, when it comes to arsenal. Mizorowski showed me his new changeup grip and said he was hitting 20s horizontally on the changeup. And I feel like he has a four pitch mix, whereas Burns has a two that he's trying to push into a three or four pitch mix.
Yeah.
So I like where they are actually, and I defend taking them because where I have them, they're twos. And what I'm trying to do is be conservative on my one. And, you know, I'm going to take hopefully somebody in that top seven so that they are, you know, so that they're strong, you know, health wise and skill wise. And then I'm going to take a little break, and then I'm going to take one of these hype guys that falls to me, because to me, in that group between, and I talked about this already a little bit with Gilbert, but like in that sort of 15 to 20 group, there's a lot of injury risk. George Kirby has had shoulder soreness 2 years in a row. Cole Reagans has a lot of injury risk. Yeah. Chris Sale has a lot of injury risk. Gilbert has the forearm. Joe Ryan has the back, you know? Really? So what?
No, yeah. No, I'm agreeing with you. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So, you know, And Tyler Glasnow has the everything every year, you know? And so that's
all man back.
Yeah. So that's where, so I'm like, man, if I'm going to take a pass on the old guys that have this tremendous amount of upside, then I kind of need to take some upside. So that's why Yuri Perez is a little bit higher for me than he is for you, because I want that upside there. And that's why I have, even though I know there's other analysts out there who have said, take a pass on these hype guys. They're not established. And I would say, yeah, they're not established, but could they be healthier than the old guys who are established? And so are you just taking a little bit of health risk versus skills risk? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
you know, there are different types of risks you can have. And I have been comfortable. So almost every draft, I get one of the hype seven, but it hasn't been the same guy every time, because I'm letting it fall a little bit. So I have two Mizorowskis. I have two Burns. I have two or three Cam Schlittlers. He's been the
one. Oh, man. I think he's my favorite one.
I mean, just because his draft cost is even lower than the other guys. I don't think I actually have a McLean because he kind of goes first out of the group.
Right. Cam went before McLean. So I was like, what? All right. I'll take McLean.
Yeah.
What I will push back on a little bit is the health perception of the Hype 7. So, I mean, obviously,
they could be hurt too.
Right. Well, I mean, Chase Burns is a clear ding. Because he already got hurt. And then now there's all this whatever.
And Mizorowski throws a 94 mile an hour slider.
Yeah. And Mizorowski's always kind of been, he's also inefficient. And there's something to be said about that. I'm trying as much as I can to avoid the inefficient pitchers. The ones who, he'll get 10 strikeouts, but he'll be in 5 1/3. And instead of the one that goes 7, has at least chance going 7 and being quality through it consistently. Right. Mm-hmm. And then there's Cam Schlittler, a lot of conversation about him adding so much velocity last year after we just saw someone just like fracture their elbow because they threw too hard. Spencer Schwalbach, right? I mean, okay.
But there was a relative increase there, right? Like Jacob Mizorowski's always thrown hard. And the difference with Schwalbach was he threw at a certain level and then he just threw two ticks harder. And then I'm talking about
Cam Schlittler in this way. Like Cam
has grown a lot.
It was like 93 to 98 by the end of the year or something.
Yeah. Right.
And he's like, he's even harder now with his cutter. And it's just, should I be weighing that? Should I not? I don't know. That's where my head is. Also, of course, the Trey Savage situation exists, right? So I will say there is not an injury risk at the moment. There's nothing associated with it with Bubba Chandler. Mm. And from a raw skills standpoint, I would argue that Bubba Chandler has the best four-seamer of the lot. Now, the changeup and slider are not as, just dopeness as you want them to be. They're not bad. It is the reason that I feel a little tepid more than I want to. Like, I want to be able to say best four-seamer to Bubba Chandler. Let's go. He's our guy. But it's not quite like Jared Jones and his slider. It's just a little more annoying in that way. However, I do see you have him at 36 with Mizorowski 24, Chase Burns 26, Schlittler 29, McLean at 27. And so you absolutely have him lower than the others. Well, I actually have him higher. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on Bubba Chandler.
Yeah, I think what I'm nervous about is that he's a changeup first righty. Now, that is interesting because the stuff model says that his slider is one of his best pitches. I have his spring straining stuff. Yes, his stuff was on the slider is 119. It's his best pitch. The changeup's 113. But last year, he had a high number on the stuff plus, and he only got 20% whiffs on the slider. And, that bothered me because I was like, he still needs to get a lot of righties out. And he might even start getting stacked righties against him if he is like truly a changeup first guy, And I just want him to have a great weapon against righties. Bubba has been moving upwards in my ranks because the whiff rate this spring is now matching the stuff number.
Ah. He has a
42% whiff rate on the slider this spring. He is also has a 500 slugging. I don't really want to get into that on 44 pitches in spring.
Yeah,
I don't
look at results stats.
Yeah, but I am looking at results stats when I say 42% whiff rate, but I have to because I'm trying to figure out if this is just a slider that wows the models and doesn't wow in the big leagues, because then that's a problem for me. But it looks like he has a feel for spin when I watch him. It's 2,500 spin rate. It's a decent spin rate. So I don't know. Like Logan Henderson is clearly a changeup first righty, and it might work because he can throw changeups right on right and all that stuff, but he's more like Kevin Gausman I don't think he'll ever have a very good breaking ball.
Right. Sure.
But Bubba Chandler has a chance to be much more than Logan Henderson, I think, because he could have a plus four seam, a plus slider, a plus changeup. Yeah. And so he's sort of, yes, he's lower than the other guys, but he's rising and he has the lower cost. So I do have a couple Bubba Chandlers as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just to really hone in on this with Bubba Chandler, I kind of think of it like George Kirby slider when you're talking about like the stuff doesn't match the results.
Yeah.
It's so annoying because George Kirby has like an 87 sweep at like, 87 mile per hour slider with like 10 inches of sweep. And I'm just like, how is this not like just like destroying them all the time? And I actually figured that one out, you know, and I'm going to tell you how George Kirby could save his slider after this break. It's so simple, you know.
I got it.
And I'm infuriated. I am absolutely infuriated because I feel like this conversation must have happened and it's still not getting done. And what I realized was that batters are laning George Kirby. Mm. You have, it's not a gyro slider. It is kind of like a sweeper at 87. And because of that, the ball starts inside and then goes out. And where does he throw his sinker? Away to righties. Where does he throw his four-seamer? Up and away. So they see coming inside, that's going away, right? And that means that there's these takes that you just go, how do they take that? You know, it's just
so he's so in the zone that when he throws a slider, he wants to throw it so it ends up near the zone. But maybe he could better benefit if he throws the slider so it ends up 10 feet, 10 inches out of the zone, but it looks like it's a fastball headed to the outside corner.
Or maybe you realize I'm a sinker slider guy and you throw that dang sinker inside.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I mean, I imagine that he just doesn't feel comfortable doing it. I get that. Certain guys just not as good throwing it to certain sides of the plate, or at least like just inside to the same handedness. It's a mentality thing. Okay. But if we want to see George Kirby be the George Kirby that you and I know he can be based on the stuff, based on the command he has, that is the approach that's missing. It is so, the second I kind of just stopped and thought about that, it blew my mind because it's just right there. Like and if you're a hitter, you just know inside, if it's coming there, it's the slider away. And George, that's it. You can like, that's when we talk about the things can change in a heartbeat. That's the thing that can change in a heartbeat. And you're just a completely different pitcher. I hope he does that. That would be great. The last start we saw from
really quickly,
to bring it back. Yeah.
I'm looking really quickly at Bubba Chandler's pitch heat map. And, ooh. Yeah. He's changed where he throws it.
Oh.
He's throwing it inside to righties.
Oh, yeah, he's just throwing it over. I'm seeing it all over the plate.
he's just more over the plate than trying to hit the outside corner. Maybe they were seeing it somehow and saying, oh, that's the slider. Maybe they just weren't swinging at it. And now that he's throwing it more of, he's throwing it in the zone as opposed to trying to throw it, you know, out low and away.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh man. And I mean, look, if it's successful,
I guess that's why the slugging is up a little bit too.
It's a 73% strike rate, 18% swing strike rate this spring on 44 sliders thrown. CSW is 48%, you know.
That's a good pitch.
Yeah. So you see that? That feels like a guy who's not just a slider changeup guy anymore, which is good. Yeah. Changeup is 20% to lefties and 77% to righties. We've seen 15% to lefties with that slider so far and 28 to righties by Bubba Chandler. So I believe it. I think really the biggest concern I have is how are the Pirates going to use him? Like, we just don't know yet. And I hope they just actually let him go instead of just, hey, these Carmen Majinski starts or Brashen Ashcraft starts of 75 pitches. All right, good job, buddy. Go have a nice day. You know, that would just drive me insane. Okay.
Gore and 2/3. Yay.
Yeah. just even hearing that. The last game we saw from Bubba was a week ago. We should see him tomorrow, I think. But 5 innings, 8 strikeouts, 66 pitches, 1 earned run, 1 hit, 1 walk. It's a good indication. That's the kind of guy. Zach Gallen. I got to do this one. Zach Gallen, I have him at 53 and you have him at 96. So there's something going on here, you know. I mean, we normally don't go so wide, I think, for a guy that I have inside my top 60 ever since I once put Jake Irvin around there. And you're like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, I don't know. I got to figure this out. thanks for calling me out on that one. but Zach Allen, explain your mentality at 96. What has you just completely avoiding him, it looks like?
I mean, he has three above average pitches by stuff. It's the slider, the cutter, and the four seam. And I would figure that at least one of those falls below average, you know, when he has to stretch it out. He's not locating the slider, the cutter, or the four seam that well right now. It's a six, but you know what it is to me, what Zach Allen is now is like a Merrill Kelly. He's like a veteran with boring stuff. And when his command is good and he puts it all together, he's good. But it going into the season is not somebody I have to put really high.
But if you knew a game, Merrill Kelly.
If I was getting the good Merrill Kelly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Merrill Kelly has some four fives on his record too.
I kind of want you to show up to Merrill Kelly, make it Merrill Kelly. Let me see the full report right there. Thank you. I see some four fives down here.
Yeah. Oh, what happened to those years?
what I see, like, he's okay. He's around the point where the IL stashes happen, which is around 60. That's where my Schmellenbach and Hunter Green and Corbin Burns, Justin Steele, Garrett Cole, et cetera.
Yeah, so right? I'm surprised. I would take an IL stash over him, I think.
Okay, so Zach Gallen is ahead of it because I'm essentially putting the guys who I think I draft and don't drop throughout the entire year above that IL section. Mm-hmm. And what I see from Gallen so far, I mean, it's exactly what we talked about with Brandon Pfaadt of like banging the TV a bit, okay? Of like, all right, Zach Allen had a bad year. He had a down year. And he also was down in velocity. This time in spring training, I saw a tweet about it. And it was great. It was like 93 and change in 2024 spring. It was 91 and change this time in 2025. And now he's at 94 with his velocity. And not only that, he's also the opening day starter for the Diamondbacks, which I know doesn't sound like a big deal, but then you realize that he was signed late. And I certainly had some concern that he wouldn't be able to go too deep in his first few starts. So there's all of that. I'm leaning into the Arizona Diamondbacks because of their defense and the best outfield for outfielders to field balls in, according to Mike Petriello. And I mean, it was that in Wrigley, I think it was. I think though that's what it was, right? Or maybe it was, it doesn't matter. Chase Field. Just go with Chase Field. It's a great article by Mike Petriello. I'm talking to PCA as well and his opinions on these places. And I think in all likelihood, is Zach Gallen cooked or did he just have a bad year? And I'm going to say it's the latter. So I'm going to say, look, I'm going to put you right next to Aaron Nola and Ranger Suarez and Matthew Boyd. I remember our conversation at the end of last season, which was, don't go for the volume guys who are premium. Go for the middle volume ones because that's where all the value was. I'll put you near Kodai Senga, right? Same kind of idea of a bounce back who's also up in his velocity this spring, which is really good to see from a veteran. And that's really the mentality that I'm having here with Zach Gallen. You're very right. It could be,
you convinced
it could
me.
Be just not worth my time.
I'm moving him up to 85.
Well, I'm at 53.
I've put him now in a tier with Matthew Liberatore, Dustin May, Casey Mize, veterans that should put up innings.
Okay. One very quick pushback. Who's going to go deeper into games more often?
Well, Liberatore is going to be fine.
Do you think Zach Gallen is going to be limited as much as, or like, are they going to have the same pitch count?
Okay. I'll move him up to. Okay. How about this?
Is that a good argument?
77 ahead of Ryan Nelson.
Okay. That's
fine.
Be
ahead of Ryan Nelson.
Do I have Ryan Nelson ahead? It's very close to me, those two. So
much wider arsenal than Ryan Nelson.
Yeah,
who's somehow finding all the success with a
one of the best four seamers,
just a fastball, basically.
And I mean, it's a dome; it helps him too. That it's a dome for that vert. But with Ryan Nelson, it's the same conversation every time. Does he have anything? No, it's fastballs.
We have a really funny thing happening that is that we can maybe just encapsulate as one. And in fact, maybe Shota belongs in this group. Shota, Trevor Rogers, Andrew Abbott, and Chris Bubich. You have them all 15 to 60 ranks higher. That's Andrew Abbott, obviously. But you have them all higher. And even Robbie Ray. Do you have a lovable lefties tier?
Do you have a, hey, Stuff still can't figure out why.
No, we already put our finger on it. We put our finger on the model. It should be fine.
No. Lefties have this innate advantage. They have this big, big advantage. And it's also,
but we have in the model, actually, is this player a lefty?
It is. Well, it's like, it's a certain kind of lefty. And I'll tell you all about it after this break. So obviously the swatch life exists, southpaw with a tight changeup. Not all these guys are that, but if you have a very good changeup and you have a fastball that you can spot, that right there is enough to be valuable. And then if you have anything else, then you can take that leap. Andrew Abbott is someone I was trying to figure out for so long. All of us were. We completely just let him go past pick 400 last year. We just didn't care. And he had this amazing season. And initially, it's like, oh, I don't get this, whatever. Reflecting on his year, Andrew Abbott deserved a lot of his success. He made his breaking pitches tighter so that they would actually land for strikes finally, down and away to left-handers. He added more drop on the changeup and was more consistent with it. He also added, I think, 2 inches of vert on his four-seamer. As well in the process. He slightly moved his release, I believe, closer to the first base side in the process. And I think that just opened this door for him. I have him at 36 because if I really believed that he's going to repeat the same year, he'd be in top 20. Right. I am baking in, yes, there's going to be something that is worse about this. At the same time, he kind of is like a Logan Webb at this point. Like it's... Just he just keeps doing this thing. He does it well. Changeups and four seamers and the breaking ball. I understand all the risks of Cincinnati and whatnot. But when a guy has had this kind of success doing this thing and then improved it and earned it a lot more, I need to accept that. I mean, same thing with Trevor Rogers. Trevor Rogers improved his velocity and it's actually even spring even more so. And improved his locations, understood the slider and the changeup in tandem as well. The command of the fastball and changeup was just gorgeous. And he just kept doing it every single time. So then there's Bubich. Bubich, what Bubich does is great. It's just about health. And he's healthy. So sure, I'll have him. I mean, that's really all that is. I have him at 44, which I think is generous. Yeah, I don't know. It's why do you hate lefties? What do they do to you?
Oh, I mean, they're just they all have poor stuff. And, you know, it's a little bit more obvious with Abbott. So I'm just going to focus on Abbott. Please. Because, you know, he gets basically league average movement on his four seam from a league average arm slot with below league average velocity. You know, I just don't know how that adds up to anything that good. And, you know, I would say that he's been somewhat fortunate with the schedule because, you know, his first half ERA is 2.71 and his second half ERA is 4.39 and he's pitched 50% more innings in the first half than the second half in his career. He's often petered out at the end of the season health-wise as well as production-wise. You know, if he pitched a full season and he got full seasons of his August ERA and 5 September ERA, I think he would end up like maybe he is someone that you can pitch early in the season when it's cold in Cincinnati and he's, a boyish type of a player where I'd rather have him early in the season than late. There's something to be said for that. But I also am worried that he's more on the razor's edge than people think, because at 92, whatever he was last year, 92.7 for a lefty, that's near enough to average, right? Like, because the average four-seam fastball for a righty was 94.5, and then it's about a tick lower for lefty, so 93.5. So 92.7, he's close enough to it. He's throwing enough 94s up on the radar gun to seem average, right, with the velo. Yeah. It's down a little bit more this spring. And, you know, for what it's worth, he's getting his head caved in this spring, dude. I mean, it's like...
He just had a really bad one where he could not throw his fastball for a strike. Changeup was up. I do need to make a correction for myself. He did not gain anything on his four-seamer. I apologize. It was too...
I don't think it's a great
depth on the changeup is what he added. But he did not...
Maybe he could be a lefty, like, the swatch mean... What is that? That's changeup.
It's a southpaw with a tight changeup. So if you have an elite changeup,
but he doesn't really
strike rate wasn't elite.
He doesn't really have a good changeup. He has like a good slider. The fastball isn't that good. I don't know. I think that he will give up 1.5 homers per nine this year. His career is 130. Last year was 1.6. If he gives a homer and a half per inning, then he has to have a tiny little BABIP to make it work. I think it's easy enough to make, you know, the best projection is Zips with a 380 ERA for Andrew Abbott. If you're going to believe that, then you're going to take him in your top 70, top 50 for sure. But, you know, Oopsie's not alone. The Bat X has a 4.6. Oopsie has a 4.5. Steamer has a 4.5.
Your pitchless projections is with you.
Yeah. So, I tend to hew close to projections. That's the easy answer for all of these, because if you look at Trevor Rogers, the projections are for 4.2 to 4.3, basically across the board. Bubich has the best projections, I believe, probably because of park factors. But yes, Bubich has basically 3.7s to 3.9s, and then Oopsie's the only one that's over 4, which is maybe why I'm so... I guess the overarching answer is I hew closer to projections. The projections don't really like these pitchers. I have Bubich the highest of all of them because he has the best projections out of all of them. The secondary answer is I hope that the tinkering that we've done with the model is capturing the fact that these are guys are lefties. And then the third answer is I could be wrong, especially when I think about Rogers and Bubich, for a reason that you kind of intimated at, but I think tunneling maybe exists between secondary pitches.
Oh yeah. We talked about this before. Yeah.
Right. So if I'm wrong about Bubich and Rogers, it's because they can throw their sliders and changeups at similar velos and slightly different shapes, and hitters will think it's one or the other. Mm-hmm. And probably like thinking about like facing a Bubich or a Rogers, it's slow, right? It's slow. But like if I'm facing a Bubich or a Rogers, I may sit secondary at some point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because so, I mean, like so throwing a lot of secondaries.
You've definitely convinced me to pull down Abbott more. With Bubich and Rogers, I will say watching Rogers last year, this is a bias of just like me sometimes just watching guys and seeing what their confidence is with the body language, how they attack. It was awesome. he would attack them with his fastball, change up underneath. Like he felt so locked in and would execute so often. And I see that and I see, yeah, like I'm trying to avoid the situations where we go through our drafts, 6 months, we're down. This. Then you watch one start of a guy. You're like, dude, what was I thinking? Right? I've had that so many times. And
who's that going to be for us this year?
Well, that's what I'm trying to avoid as much as possible of like you have this guy in the top 35 or so and you go, yeah, he's going to be really good. And you watch one game, he gets pulled after four. It's like three walks. And you're like, what am I doing? And then you have someone who goes at six frames and like gets the win and it's great. And you look at him and yeah, this guy's going to do that all year. And
I guess I'm a little bit worried about the lows that I have somebody too low that'll be good. Like I have Ranger Suarez low, I have Trevor Rogers low. You know.
So by the way, that's a good segue. I've learned that it's Ron Hare.
That's Suarez. Right. He did say that. And but he did also say that everybody calls him Ranger and he's okay with it. So yeah. It's a little bit of the Luis Robert situation again.
Well, right. It's the MLB pronunciation guy says Robert. So whatever. And what I did actually this morning, you know, you might have seen it. I went through the entire pronunciation guide and picked out the ones that are like the most commonly mistaken or just confusing to me and made my own cheat sheet and put it on
Twitter. Oh, nice.
So there are a lot of really ones like it's George Clausen, not Klassen.
Yeah, I could get that.
Slade Ciccone. I've been saying Ciccone. Some people told me that one. Slade Ciccone. Joey Cantillo.
Well, because in Italian, the double C is supposed to be Cha, right?
Well, it's Slade Ciccone on the pronunciation guide. Right.
Okay. I mean, because he's probably not, you know, like first generation Italian.
Did he play for Italy? I didn't see him there. but there are a lot of names on there. And I highly recommend anybody who's podcasting or saying this stuff or just in general, just you should know these. It's a really helpful cheat sheet. And I keep adding as people throw in some that they constantly have. I didn't know
there's a question about Andrew.
Yeah.
How do you say it? With an H E A N E Y?
Andrew Heaney.
Yeah. Okay. I'll just adopt that one. I don't know why I think it's Haney.
Haney. That's a good question. He's retired, so I left him.
So it doesn't really matter. Yeah. Fine.
I mean, also there are a lot of new players. I was taken off of the 2025, so once the 26 comes in, I'll go back and do it. I essentially just have a Figma file that I just now add to it. So I'll probably make this as a large thing, but I think it's interesting because we had access to it before, but it was 30 teams, and it's just so obnoxious to like go to the one team and find that one player that you're thinking. Now it's like, all right, here are the ones that everyone screws up all the time. And it can be very confusing to remember which one they are. So yeah, Ron Hare.
I will bookmark that.
Oh, it's a Ron Hare is one that threw me. There's also Y-A-I-M-I Garcia. How do you pronounce his name?
It's Jimmy.
It's Jimmy.
Yeah. Yeah, the Blue Jays crew. They corrected me.
I could not believe that one.
Y is a really interesting one because in certain countries it's more of a Y, in certain countries more of a J. And I've heard that it might actually be Jordan Alvarez, but you know, there also is this thing that once it becomes something, you know, like Luis Robert, you know, you just say, yeah, it's fine. I hear you. I know you're referring to me.
Ranger Suarez, right?
Yeah.
Also, Jack Ahanowitz is on here for you, you know.
What have I been calling him?
No, you know, I don't think you remember in San Francisco. I was talking about Jack Ahanowitz during the live podcast way back when.
And I just gave up on pronouncing.
You were like, I can't, Nick, help me. But you didn't say it like that. But and also, it's Elliot Ramos, not Helio Ramos. It's Elliot.
Yeah. Yeah, he's local, so I hear that.
There's so many great ones. You guys check it out. It's on my Twitter profile at PitcherList. But I want to keep going.
But back to Rogers really quickly. Like I have a 4-3 projection for him from Oopsie. So like I have him as high. I have him, the only other person who I have higher than him that has a 4-3 projection is Shota. And the guys around them that I have there have 3.9s and 3.8s.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like I have pushed them up. I just haven't.
How much do you think about like one just bad day at the park changes your ERA from like 3.8 to 4.10?
Oh, I know. But with the starters, at least you have 35 chances or 30 chances theoretically. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
It's like I constantly just.
I guess there could be some false precision here.
Right.
I'm like, oh yeah, Braxton Ashcraft has a 3.73. You can't put a 4.3 ahead of a 3.73. But the error bars are pretty wide around these numbers.
It's like the argument we were having of do we round our projections for innings or not? I'm like, yes.
Yes, we definitely do.
July is not going to be like, we just round it, guys. We don't know exactly. Just round it. But it really does make me think. It's also why I, in season, I actually might be surprised to hear, you know, I very rarely check in on what the ERA and WHIP and strikeout rates are for guys.
Oh, I don't look at actual. I will still look at projected because the projected rolls in a lot of the things I'm using. But
see, I don't. My whole thing. I mean, I'm just following the start, so I just have a general idea. Like
K's and walks,
crazy to rely on that.
I look at K's and walks, right? You look at K's and walks.
The actual number? No.
Yeah, I do. I look at K's and walks.
What I'm trying to get at is sometimes I'll look up like the individual pitch arsenal and like what's going on if I need to check in. But the season long number at that point, I just don't. I'm following every single start. Like I just know the game log. I know that.
Yeah.
But the actual total number, I don't. You know,
yeah, I mean, it does surprise me sometimes when someone says, but he has a blah, blah, blah ERA. And I'm like, oh, does he? I don't look at that. No.
Oh, my gosh. I got a text from my wife. I have to mention this on the podcast, guys. It's she got selected. Jury duty. You know?
Oh,
that's
not a good selection.
We got a life ahead of us that's still a little bit different. All right, sorry. Anyway, continuing on here, I'm happy to see that we are on the same page with, say, Aaron Nola, and this is because we believe in even year Nola. However, there are some differences, and I'm actually really surprised at this one because you convinced me more for him, and now we're like way apart. I'm actually where you are. Luis Gil at 80, 107 for you. I could have sworn you were just convincing me to go get him.
Yeah, he just took a real big dive recently because I just got super nervous that he's not going to break camp.
Oh.
I don't know. It's not projections. This is a vibes thing where it was late in the rankings, and I was like, they're talking about how it's not good shape on the fastball, but it is. I thought I was taking crazy pills, but and I don't even know who they would take if they didn't take him.
Carlos Degrane.
No, they're not going to go.
No, I know they're not going to either.
That'd be great.
I mean, Cade Winquest is a Rule 5 pick who has started in the past, but I don't think they've been using him like that.
And Stuff loves him crazily enough. But yeah, I doubt they would just stick him in there. Like Ryan Yarbrough, would they just...
They actually have been partnering him, haven't they?
For 3 weeks, you know, until Rodon comes back. Like, I don't know. I just didn't like the vibes anymore. And I have like 3 or 4 shares of Heal, and I still believe in him. And look, his spring K minus BB is 26 minus 6. Like, if that's good, the spring stuff is good. The results haven't been great. I don't know how much they're looking at the results. I still think he'll be in there. But, you know, some of the stuff you said also convinced me, like, he does not really have good command. And the changeup, the model doesn't like it. He likes it. I don't know.
This is like a Romeo and Juliet situation where, like I'm Christian doing this Javier. Thing. I thought you wanted this, but you do this because I'm doing this. We're going other directions. We're not unified.
It's a little bit like Christian Javier.
Oh, you know, yeah. I remember you nervous you in the same ways, that, right?
That can make you feel excited. Like, oh, a young Christian Javier. I basically tanked his, I dropped his innings number to 111. And once I dropped his innings number to 111, I was like, oh, he needs to be down with other guys that have low injury number, innings pitch. Because do I think the guys who have higher with low innings are like Braxton Garrett, Joe Musgrove, and Bryce Miller. I'll take all those guys over Luis Gil if they're both healthy, right?
Yeah, right.
So that's where he started dropping.
Now,
yeah,
there is one guy.
It's pretty funny, though.
Yeah, right? Oh, my gosh. So what's really funny is last week we did our SP Sleepers podcast, and I was really behind on catching up spring games. And so I put out my list, my updated rankings finally on Friday last week. I'm putting them out again on Thursday and for the weekend update, and then one more time on Wednesday before the season starts, just to lock them in. I recommend you do it too. Just make sure, see, I told you so. That's it. You get it on Wednesday. You don't have outdated information. So I then caught up in 3 days, and I deeply regretted that I hadn't done it before our sleeper episode, because I uncovered some things and it does look like you've noticed some of it too. I'm going to start with Slade Ciccone, who yeah. we're actually not far away from, 98 to 101. Why am I part of the Slade Brigade all of a sudden? It's because he has a cutter that he's throwing 32% of the time instead of 2 to 3% of the time.
It's a model pleaser.
It's like 89, 90 miles per hour. It is right there at the cut line. It's nice and good. That's good.
It's like a 4 or 5 like pitch
opening weekend.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a 5-5 pitch mix now. It's, you know, it's basically like a meh fastball, but the cutter looks good. So you can almost give him average fastball as a group, you know, average fastball, multiple breaking ball guy. You know, it's definitely a Guardians type pitcher, but.
And they'll let him go six again, right? I mean, this is the constant feeling in my head of just, Nick, remember who is the guy that throws 90 pitches and is able to get 15 pitches an inning there, right? Who are outside of the inefficient ones, who are kind of like the Joey Cantillo types, the Jack Leiter types, the Max Meyer types, who are exciting. Like, we will see a game from each of them likely of at least 8 strikeouts. And after that, I go, yeah, but are you going to do it again next time, right? And I have them, all three of those ranked lower than you do just because of that. Of in a 12-teamer, I won't be able to make a decision in all likelihood based on one good game or one bad game. I'm going to have to hold on for longer than I want to. Does that make sense? That?
Yeah.
That's all three of those guys. Cantillo, Leiter, Max Meyer.
Oh, yeah. I think with Meyer and Cantillo, Cantillo has had a bit of a down arrow for me.
Mm-hmm.
He's still pretty high, but that's again, the projections are keeping him high. But he has a down arrow. He used to be more at 40, 50, and now he's 65. So he dropped a lot. Meyer is growing on me because he looks healthy. The spring numbers again are good. I've been pushing him up, and then the reason I think it wouldn't be that bad to hold on to Meyer is just the home park. So, you know, at the very least, you'd be like, well, you know, that wasn't the greatest start, but next week he's home against the Pirates. You'd be like, oh yeah, I want him for that, you know. So I do agree that it might be hard to drop him. What was the third one?
You have Max Meyer.
No, I just said Max
Jack
Meyer.
Leiter.
Jack Leiter. He is maddening. He will always be maddening. He's always a difficult rank, and I don't even know where I have him, and I'm mad about it already. 71. Yeah, I don't like. He's like my old catnip. He's like the Joe Boyle of the top 75. You know.
Oh gosh, no, don't. I'm going to tell you who your Joe Boyle is of the top 50. You know the answer already.
Oh, who's that?
Oh, you know the answer, you know. It's Braxton Ashcraft. You know. Don't you dare try to run away from that.
That's good.
Here's
a guy that jumped up for me into the top 100, and you like him even better than I do, but I think we like him for the same reasons. Mick Abel looks like he's just passing Zebby. I think, you know, there's no reason that they have to take Zebby. He's not out of options. And so it seems to be just the one of the other. And when I started looking at, if it's one or the other, what am I going to use if I'm the Twins to make a decision? I'm going to use our stuff models, and Mick looks a little better than him in the stuff models. And if I'm going to use the K minus BB in the spring, Mick looks better there. And I do think the third thing that does matter sometimes is like seniority. Well, Zebby was up last year and had more of a chance, so he deserves it. But I'm not sure the Twins care about that. You know, you know, they may just say they're both young guys who got a taste of the major leagues this year. Whoever is better, we'll go north with him.
You know what it really should be?
What's that?
Simi Woods Richardson out.
I mean, I agree with you. We don't have too many people that agree with us. There are a lot of people who really like him. But
especially considering that he's not throwing hard like he was in the second half of last year. He had a splitter that it was introduced that did help.
I mean, he's never really thrown hard, but yeah.
Well, he was throwing 94 at times. Like, he's someone who's oscillated. He's also had high extension, low extension, this and that. It's just,
but he has no options left. And so he's just going to make it based on that, I think.
So who are they going to trade? him for. All right. There's also in that conversation with Mick Abel. I mean, I've been a Mick Abel fan since I saw him in the spring, I want to say, with the Phillies. And either last year or the year before. And I he should be in the majors. He's got phenomenal command, I think, on his fastballs. And he has a lot of potential in the secondaries. Parker Messick's in that same boat for me because it looked like it'd be Logan Allen, but it shouldn't be Logan Allen. And Logan Allen has an option. Cantillo does not. Parker Messick has two options. It should be Messick. I don't know what they're doing. We still don't know. And
Logan Allen has an option. Just option him. He's not.
Yes. Good. Yes, they should. But he's
Anthony Kay is rising in mine. You were ahead on that one.
This is the guy. You know, you weren't at Tat Wars. I don't know why you weren't at Tat Wars. You weren't at Tat Wars. You got to come to Tat Wars. It's the best. Okay.
Yeah.
He was a joke for me the entire weekend because I did these articles on Friday and I just, I watched the Anthony Kay star. This came up. I was like, I went, oh, this guy started for the White Sox. 95, 96 from the left side with a pinpointed changeup and cutters inside to righties.
Yeah.
He just doesn't have as good of a breaking ball as I want against lefties, but it's the White Sox and he's in that rotation. And like, I just circled him massively as 15 teamer sleeper everywhere. Got him for TGFBI like 1 hour later. You know?
Yeah, we got him super late in my 20 team, 28 keeper. We got him in like the 15th round of the restocking draft. Nobody cared about him at all. And we were excited to get him. So he's got it up there. I just gave him a little more juice. He's like 112 for me now. He's getting closer to where you have him. I think, I was surprised when I looked at the model. I thought he hadn't learned that much when he went abroad. Like I thought there hadn't been that much change in his arsenal. Mm-hmm. And in some ways there hasn't, but one way he was better than we thought before he left, right? Like he was actually a lefty with some decent command and a good slider. And then he went and he learned a sinker. So now that he comes back, he has the two fastballs and the sinker. And I think he even improved the changeup. So what's that?
He throws the sinker inside the lefties. Really is just like get the slider or sweeper down and he's good.
There is a point in these ranks where some of our differences, again, like I said, like 3 or 4 points at the very top of the rankings difference doesn't mean as much as, but, and so 40 or 30 at the bottom couldn't mean not as much, but like Robleski is pretty interesting because I was in the process while making these rankings of deciding that I thought Robleski was ahead of Ryan. Mm-hmm. And so Robleski jumped Ryan in these ranks for the first time. And so I would say that the 20-point difference between us probably just has to do with some injury stuff and where we have some small innings pitched guys and stuff like that. I bet you that we directionally agree with each other, which is that Robleski's ahead of Ryan. He's a pretty good pitcher. He's in that rotation. It's just that maybe everybody in the rotation, other than the very top guys, is going to be capped at like 120 innings pitched or something this year.
I mean, Robleski has thrown a decent amount now. Like he pitched a lot last year. We saw these spikes also in velocity that he held at times. And what I saw is that he actually was a little bit worse than his last start, but I think that's because he knows he's in the rotation now.
he's pacing himself.
Yeah, I think it's a really smart thing. That it's what happens all the time is that once they get confirmation of it. I mean, I think we saw a lot of starts even just yesterday. Some of these guys were growing softer. And that's how I've explained a lot of the extension drops is because if you see less extension, that means less exertion.
It was the day after a lot of minor league cuts.
Yeah.
River Ryan went down. All right, here we go.
Yeah. He also might have been told something about maybe there's something with Sheehan. Maybe he's been told something about Roki Sasaki. But at the very least, like Robleski's in that rotation.
Ryan went down, I think Sasaki is in the rotation, which is not what I would do, but
no, maybe it's Landon Mack. Okay.
that's enough.
Okay. We're going to do one more here. And I am very curious because this is before the news. You had Richard Fitz at 115 and you did not have Kyle Leahy in your rankings. However,
I did not have him at
Fitz
all.
Is out. Leahy is in. And I'm curious where you would put Kyle Leahy now. I remember talking about him a long time ago.
Why don't I have Leahy in here?
It's because you thought he was out of the rotation because Fitz was in the rotation. That's how I see it. I'm giving you an out here. You know, take it. just sees it.
I guess I'll take it, but
because Fitz at 115
in there, dude.
There you go.
I think I might just put Leahy in there at 115 ish.
I mean, I would imagine you put him wherever you put Fitz. I have him at 104. I think the slider can be very good. I'm curious how much velocity he'll have in season with it. The command
is 90 mile an hour slider. It's a good sinker. It's actually a decent four seamer. He's lost the two ticks that you'd expect him to lose.
Yeah.
You know, and he's still been all right. So yeah, I there was a moment where everyone was in on Kyle Leahy, and then they kind of jumped ship after a bad start in the spring, and then I think he's actually, yeah, I think he's a sort of top 125 guy somewhere in there.
Why do you enjoy having a very bad whip?
Why?
Because you have Jose Soriano at 76.
Yeah, I know. they option Christian Moore. Like, maybe their defense will be good one of these years. Come on. Some year they got to have a good defense.
Okay.
Johan, I'm not expecting
86. I am not 100% sold that Oviedo is going to be the number five.
Yeah, I'm worried about that one too. I've toggled that. I only have 111 innings pitched for him.
I mean, okay, here's the thing. Oviedo, he has a hard fastball with surprising vert and a very flat attack angle with 7+ feet of extension. Like, it should be amazing. He also has good enough breaking stuff that's gotten whiffs in the past. It's probably because of that extension with that velocity just amplifies it regardless of the stuff. Now, strikes. What's up? How are we doing this? Because we don't know with Oviedo.
Yeah, he does not.
And I think the Red Sox acquired him hoping that by now something would have been tweaked. They'd been able to fix it in some fashion. I'm not sure that it has. And Connelly Early has not been removed yet. He's starting today. And boy, oh boy, it's so funny. I've been so off the Connelly Early train because I just give up all hope that he would make the rotation.
Yeah, I really didn't think he would either.
But if he does, I absolutely adore Connelly Early. If you tell me right now, yes, Nick, he is in the rotation from the get-go, I am putting Connelly Early at 50. That is how confident I am in Connelly Early. So I kind of regret that I didn't put him in the ranking at all, just at like the McAbel, Parker Messick area. Because, all right, if they're not on the team, you just drop them and that doesn't really matter, the last pick in your 12th team or that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, it does seem to me, though, you have him at Oviedo at 86, so you are believing that he would be effective to some degree. If you were in this,
I think the fastball is really good, and there are other pitchers that are, you know, like we talk about Ryan Nelson. I don't know if he's off air, but like, you know, there are other pitchers that are their best pitchers, their fastball, like Mackenzie Gore. You know, there's guys you can still, if your best pitch is your fastball and you throw it 40% of the time, like you can still be a pretty good pitcher. I'm hoping that some of his ability, he had some ability to land and locate and shape the slider in the past. And I'm assuming that some of that will come back, or show itself at some point. Cause he had it used to be Oviedo, yeah, a good slider. I don't know where that went. And I would say that, you know, it could come back. And then lastly, they traded for him and in a way that makes me feel like they wanted him in the rotation.
Right.
And
right.
Early and Tolley have options. And so my thinking was just they were going to send those guys down. So yeah, Tolley's already down, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Tolley was, let's be honest, guys. Tolley is amazing four seamer and then just cannot A, spot it as he wants, and B, nothing else. He's trying. He's trying to make the cutter work. It's just not a polished pitcher. And it's frustrating. Connelly Early today, 5 innings, 0 runs, 1 hit, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts, 11 whiffs, 75 pitches.
Yeah, I think would put him probably in the 70s, maybe the late 60s. Yeah.
Why not higher?
I mean, yes, he's doing all these things, but he's not really missing bats. I know he missed bats last year, but he doesn't have the stuff number that projects missing bats. It's a lot of command. I'm
going to push back and tell you that he had a changeup that was a -3 to -4 inch vert.
Yeah, let me see what I've got on spring numbers for early.
I mean, that is, you gave a little wrinkle with your nose there, appropriately so. Hearing
that. Yeah, I mean, it's good. My numbers say the sweeper, the four seam, and the change are all good. And he locates all of his pitches well.
You heard it here first, guys.
I mean, I'd have him ahead of Messick, who, you know, I have 75. I'd have him ahead of Leiter. He commands his pitches. Oh. I have him ahead of Cantillo. So now we're 65. Would I have him ahead of like Weathers and Rogers? I have them 60. Would I have him like, I doubt he's getting ahead of like, you know, Tanner Bibee, Braxton Ashcraft, Kate Horton. You want me ahead? Okay,
so yes, Bibee. Yes, Ashcraft, not Kate Horton. As in like Kate Horton should be higher than Connelly Early starting.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I could have him. I'm going to be a little bit more conservative than you, I think. And I think my best place for him is probably in the 50s somewhere.
50s? All right. I've said I'll put him at 50.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. I think I would put him, like, I think, you know, like a Bubich. He's probably like a better Bubich.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're different. Right. Connelly Early, better command, wider arsenal. Bubich has proven that he can miss bats and everything with what he does. But I think this is a good moment.
Bubich has proven. So.
Yeah, right. We are on the same page here. And honestly, I mean, I skipped over so many because we're just like, yeah, well, that's right. And that's right. Yeah, right. That's right. And that's always a great feeling with you, Eno, I got to say. I think we hit on most of the ones here. So this has been a blast. And I can't wait to yell at you about all this next week. You know, it's going to be vastly different. You know, what are you putting out before the season starts that people can get excited to look for?
I've got my bold predictions. I believe they're coming out on Friday. Ooh. And we're doing the do at Rates and Barrels. Look for some a new look and some new look and feel to Rates and Barrels on Monday.
Oh, nice. So that's going to be exciting. I look forward to that. And I will have my top 100 updated tomorrow. That is the 19th, or going into draft weekend. We'll also have our ultimate draft guide updated as well. And then I'll have another final update next Wednesday. So a week from today, as we start the season, you know, absolutely bonkers. Cashew agrees, my lovely cat, who, if you're watching on video, you will see me wrangle this entire time with her tail showing up. But anyway, thank you all so much for listening today. Oh, baseball is a coming. Thanks so much to Eno Saris. My name is Nick.
There's the cat tail.
There it is. It's just there. You just got to watch the video on YouTube, guys. On the behalf of Eno Saris, my name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about the craft of pitching again next week.